Broadcasting.
Good afternoon. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. Today is May 13th. Before we start, let's have a roll call, please.
Representative Levy.
Levy present by video.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh is here by video.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith is here by video.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama present by video.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham is present by video.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke present by video.
And Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson present by video. Thank you. For everybody who's here today, we appreciate it if everybody's, except for the committee members, we appreciate it if everybody's camera is off and microphone is off until you're called on to speak. We have a really full list today for this public hearing. This public hearing is on a bill that has already been heard and worked on. Someone needs to turn their microphone off. As members of the public are being coming into the room, please make sure your microphones are off and cameras are off. Thank you. As we work on this bill has already had a public hearing and been considered in another committee. The purpose of the hearing today is to hear the Dash A46 amendment. We're going to have a brief introduction from LRO to catch us up to date on how it comes to be that we're hearing this bill, just a few words about what the bill does and the amendment that we are being presented with today. Then we're going to go to legislators. Legislators will have an opportunity to speak. There are five legislators. After the legislators, there are 32 witnesses who have signed up to speak. That's a lot of people to cover in under 2 hours. I'm pretty confident we can get through the whole list if everyone is able to keep their comments succinct. We're going to start with members of the public after the legislators speak. We're going to start at a time limit of 3 minutes each for the first several speakers at least. And then once we're a little bit ways into the hearing and do another time check, at some point we may need to move to a 2 minute time limit. So I'm encouraging everybody to keep your comments succinct if you can. And committee members, if there are questions, questions are welcome. But then if someone is answering the question for you, I would ask that the person providing the expert information in response to also be succinct to the extent you can, because we certainly do want the members' questions answered. First, let's hear from Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Chair Nathanson, I am pleased to present the Dash 46 amendment to House Bill 2021, a bill that will set the state of Oregon on a course to 100% clean electricity by 2040. House Bill 2021 was originally signed to and reviewed by the House Energy and Environment Committee, which I am honored to chair. We held three hearings for the bill, adopted the Dash 23 amendment, and passed the bill here to Revenue. The Dash 46 amendment is the result of further discussions that have occurred over the past several weeks. The Dash 46 includes a few very good additions to the bill. However, it does not substantially change the very strong base legislation that was developed through a collaborative stakeholder process that involved partners who, in some cases, quite frankly, had never sat down together before. While my job here today is to tell you about the amendment, it may be helpful to begin with a brief and broad overview of the base bill. As noted earlier, House Bill 2021 provides a timeline for clean energy targets that will get the state to a 100% reduction in the baseline greenhouse gas emissions as determined by average emissions in 2010 to 2012 by 2040 in the electricity sector. The bill includes electric investor-owned utilities, those are PGE and PacifiCorp in the state of Oregon, and electric service suppliers. Not included or covered in the bill are consumer-owned utilities that rely primarily on BPA-supplied power and Idaho power, and the Idaho power exemption will be reflected in the Dash 46 amendment. Utilities will be required to develop clean energy plans that describe how they intend to achieve the new targets. While they are instructed to pursue non-emitting electricity sources, the bill is technology neutral, which I think is a great strength of the legislation, allowing the utilities to develop a variety of clean energy sources, as well as energy efficiency, demand response, or other end user strategies that lead to reduced emissions. The Public Utility Commission, the PUC, will review and approve clean energy plans, which must be updated every 2 years. The Department of Environmental Quality will monitor emissions using its existing system and report outcomes to the PUC. The PUC can use various strategies, including issuing a temporary exemption from compliance if necessary to maintain system reliability, to meet demand in the case of resource variability, or to respond to cumulative rate impacts that exceed 6% of revenues. So, colleagues, that's the concept in a nutshell. But of course, there is much more exciting stuff in the bill, including community benefits advisory panels, a study of small-scale renewable energy projects, community green tariffs, responsible labor provisions, a prohibition on the siting of new fossil gas plants, and a $50 million community renewable investment fund. For easy reference, I would refer you to a section-by-section summary of the bill that is posted on OLIS. So now the amendment. The Dash 46 amendment adds a few important elements to the bill. In Section 4, we have added requirements to the clean energy plans developed by utilities. Those plans must now include, first, a risk-based examination of resiliency opportunities as well as costs, consequences, outcomes, and benefits based on PUC resiliency standards. Second, plans must examine the costs and opportunities of offsetting energy generated from fossil fuels with community-based renewable energy. Section 17 clarifies that the Act does not apply to an electric company serving 25,000 or fewer customers, effectively eliminating Idaho Power from the bill. Changes to Section 29 and 30 include clarifications to the Community Renewable Energy Project Grant Program. Adam Lohman, the author of this section, is here and will discuss the fund's structure and operation later. Section 36 expands the existing requirements for acquisition of power from small-scale renewable projects. Current language requires utilities to acquire 8% of electric supply from small-scale projects or biomass facilities by 2025. The amendment expands that requirement to 10% of capacity by 2030. Finally, the Dash 46 contains a smattering of technical cleanup revisions that have been identified over the past few weeks. I want to note that this amendment is the product of extensive discussion and reflects workable additions that we believe augment the bill, but still maintain the carefully negotiated base bill. I know we have a lineup of experts here to speak to House Bill 2021 this afternoon, and so I'm going to stop so that we can hear from them. But finally, let me say how thrilled I am to be a part of this historic legislation and how deeply grateful I am to the stakeholders who have worked tirelessly to design this very clear blueprint toward the state's clean electricity future. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Rep. Marsh. Rep. Reschke, you have a question.
Just a quick comment, if I may, Madam Chair.
Sure.
And that is, I don't necessarily see why this bill is in House revenue other than to further work on the policy. And we're really not a policy committee, we're a revenue committee. And the only nexus I can find between this bill and why it's in our committee is that two members on our committee also sit on the committee on E&E. So that's just one point I want to put out there. And the second one is, With the $50 million allocation from the general fund, this bill also needs to have a further or a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Reschke, for your comments. And I do anticipate that if that section and the allocation remains in, there should be a referral. So thank you for raising that. Representative Pham, you're next.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson and Vice Chair Reschke and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Khan Pham and I represent House District 46. And I am honored today to testify in support of House Bill 2021 and particularly the Dash 46 amendment. Colleagues, House Bill 2021 is known as the 100% Clean Energy for All Bill. And I've had the privilege of working on House Bill 2021 in the House Energy and Environment Committee alongside a broad array of stakeholders from a wide range of different sectors, including environmental justice advocates, labor advocates, local governments, electric utilities, ratepayer advocates, renewable developers, environmental and climate groups, researchers and public health experts, and community members participating in the Energy Justice Leadership Institute. We have heard from a lot of different people and groups from all over the state who say that we are ready to chart the course towards 100% clean energy in Oregon and do it in a way that works for our communities, especially for the people who need relief the most. I also feel grateful to have been part of community organizing back in 2020, working with communities and stakeholders from every corner of the state to help envision and set the stage for this collaborative policy. And now over a year later, I'm heartened to see that so many different stakeholders have come together under difficult circumstances to find common ground, compromise, and consensus. This is a different face and approach to energy policy that's deeply grounded in environmental justice. The Dash 46 amendment comes a long way from where the Dash 1 amendments were, and this bill represents a substantial targeted investment in community-based renewable energy projects for Oregon communities. We have common goals that will be achieved in House Bill 2021, including creating economic development in the parts of Oregon that need it most, ensuring that Oregon workers are well supported in entering and participating in the clean energy workforce, and ensuring that at every step of the way, low-income, BIPOC, rural, and coastal communities are shaping the transition to a 100% clean electricity future and are not left out of the benefits. Oregon has experienced unprecedented wildfires, intense ice storms, and each summer the heat gets more and more intense. These examples underscore the need to adapt to a changing climate and the need for energy resiliency. We need to seek out justice-based solutions to these challenges in every single sector. House Bill 2021 will help do that by investing in a disaster-resilient, community-based energy projects in parts of Oregon where there are not many funding sources for community-based renewable energy. We have an opportunity to pass a strong 100% clean electricity bill through the Dash 46 amendment that is grounded in the principles of environmental justice. This bill offers us the chance to reduce pollution and greenhouse gas emissions while also seeding local projects for community ownership of electricity, good-paying jobs that contribute to economic development. These amendments have been written in a way to include any viable technology that the state can procure that does not place undue harm or burden on EJ communities. By setting clear targets for generating all our electricity from renewable and non-emitting sources, we can clear the way for benefits spanning the entire state, from the development of solar on the east side of the Cascades to offshore wind along the Pacific coastline. There can be investment into battery development and time-of-use electricity rates that will help create a smart grid. The build-out of green infrastructure will spur jobs throughout Oregon. Moving our state away from fossil fuel dependence will also help achieve our goals to mitigate the extreme weather events that will continue to occur. The time to pass this bill is in this session. I look forward to Oregon passing a 100% clean energy standard that benefits impacted communities and that will create the clean energy opportunities and investments that we need. For these reasons, I urge your support for House Bill 2021. Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Pham. Next is Representative Helm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can everybody see me?
Yes.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for taking my testimony today. Ken Helm, House District 34, Vice Chair of the E&E Committee. And I have a couple of prepared comments and then a final statement. I'm here to testify in favor of this amendment. And I echo the comments of Chair Marsh on the work that went into it and the open-mindedness of the folks that participated. This bill will move state policy to promote non-emitting electricity to the maximum extent practical, and as stated in Section 2 of the bill, in a manner that provides additional direct benefits to communities in this state in the forms of creating and sustaining meaningful living wage jobs. I understand this language to mean that the renewable energy generation will be built where Oregon workers would get the jobs associated with the construction and the operation of those facilities. Among its aspects, as Chair Marsh mentioned, HB 2021 increases the existing community-based small-scale renewable energy mandate in Oregon in ORS 469A.210, moving from requiring 8% of aggregate electrical capacity by 2025 to requiring 10% by 2030 and onward. This is an ongoing requirement, as I understand it, with no backsliding below the 10% target allowed by the utilities in the years after 2030. Finally, as recognized in HB 2021, by the study of opportunities to encourage development of small-scale and community-based renewable energy projects, additional work is needed to ensure our communities see maximum benefits from Oregon's transition to cleaner energy. Depending on the study's results, this work could include further strengthening of the requirements in ORS 269A.210, as I mentioned before. I really appreciate the willingness of Chair Marsh and the Speaker and you, Chair Nathanson, to participate in what amounted to a second look at the numbers. The numbers being those costs that could be associated, the cost to ratepayers, that could be associated with the changes that we are suggesting in this bill. Those costs estimates are in your records. They indicate that we think the changes that could occur in rates will occur well under the cost cap of the 6% cost cap that's mentioned in the bill and provides an off-ramp if costs exceed that amount. So from that point of view, I think we've done a good job to both stretch our goals to providing community renewable energy while not burdening residential ratepayers in particular. At the same time, Madam Chair, it's no secret to, I think, anybody on the committee or has worked with me so far this session on the bill, that I'm an advocate for an in-state build standard so that Oregon could take advantage of the economic benefits and the resiliency benefits of a higher percentage of projects being built in Oregon. I've advocated that we put that in statute so that we understand that standard will be met and the benefits will come to the state as a certainty. That's not part of this amendment, and that reflects a lack of consensus on that issue. I'll say at this time, I remain interested in the concept. If others want us to renew that conversation, I will be part of it. But for right now, the amendment is as it is, and it's a good one. It's a good addition to the bill. I urge your committee to accept this amendment and pass the bill on to wherever it's going, whether it's going to Ways and Means or the House floor, so that our full chamber can consider it and hopefully move it along in the process. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm happy to try to answer questions, but I'm also in the middle of Judiciary Committee, and so I do need to be getting back to that duty as well.
Thank you for being with us, Representative Helm. And if a question comes up later when you're not present and it's you who needs to answer it, we'll make sure that it's recorded and forwarded to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
The next speaker is Representative David Brock Smith. Followed by Representative Mark Owens. Representative Brock Smith. And if he had to step away for a minute, let's hear from Representative Owens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity and members of the committee. For the record, Mark Owens, State Representative for House District 60, serving 23% of the southeast corner of the state. So I appreciate the time and appreciate the continuation of House Bill 2021. I'd just like to talk a little bit about how this is proceed. So I've been in these conversations, maybe just about a little bit over a year, even before I knew I was going to be in energy and environment. And then about a week after session started, I got into energy and environment and was able to take a deep dive into a lot of these conversations. And I want to thank Chair Marsh and other members for including me in those conversations on Thursday nights and Tuesday nights when I were headed home and we were working through this policy. I've actually learned a lot, and I do appreciate that. As most of you might not know, there was two different concepts out there, an emission concept and an RPS concept. Both of them are trying to move to 100% clean, some of them structurally different. There was an attempt to merge those two concepts to move forward collectively together with the benefits from both of those. Some of that has occurred and some of that hasn't. And now we have House Bill 2021-46, I believe. As I was reading -46 yesterday evening, I was a little disappointed, and I'd like to share some of those disappointments that came out to me. There were two things that I really wanted and really supported, two additional things that I wanted and supported that have not shown up in the -46. One of them was that I was hoping that we could take small scale renewable from 8% generation to 8% capacity. And what that actually means to those who aren't really up on that is that almost tripled the amount of small scale renewables that would happen in the state. That's very important for small scale resiliency, for community benefits, and for jobs. I do understand the proposal shows a change to 10% by 2030 of just capacity. And I'd like to acknowledge this is a step forward, but it clearly does not articulate in the policy what will qualify for community renewables. So therefore, I believe that some community renewables that aren't actually community renewables might be credited for that. I'd like to make sure that we get some intent on the record that maybe what actually will qualify. Will net metering qualify for small scale renewable? I would hope not. The other one, as I was reading through the -846, was that I was really hoping to see some insight in state siting. Can we, if we as Oregonians, try to pass bold legislation, make sure that we can have resilience in Oregon, jobs in Oregon, and community benefit in Oregon? The amount of siting that would occur in Oregon if we got up to a 50% siting requirement would be billions. This billions of dollars of investment is now going to go out of state. Our IOUs will seek power to other people that have the ability to build within their state. If we could have directed some of that building to happen in the state, we wouldn't be looking at $50 million worth of small-scale renewables. We'd be looking at billions of dollars of building in the state. And that's where we would have seen labor, we would have seen opportunity, we would have seen resilience. So as Representative Helms said, I am a strong supporter and like to continue that conversation and however that occur. Because folks, we're leaving a lot of opportunity for the state of Oregon on the table, from the digesters to wind to solar, you name it. This bill should clearly articulate we need to build in Oregon. There are plenty of off-ramps in the bill at 6% increase for utility rates that would have compensated if we could have not have figured out the numbers on what those rate increases would have been for siting in the state. There are off-ramps there. Rates would have not gone up excessively as some of those would say because it's built in. It can only increase by 6%. I still don't believe that we have a clear understanding of the numbers that are involved. How can we support policy without having clear numbers of actually what in-state siting would cost? I will go to the record and look at those numbers that Representative Helm talked about. But honestly, folks, I don't think there's agreement yet. I don't think the IOUs, the PUCs, the OASIS, the solar developers, the wind developers have came to a common set of numbers. This is revenue. I was able to serve with you guys for a short period of time, and I know numbers are important. So I'd encourage you, look at those numbers, challenge those numbers, talk to people about those numbers. Because if those numbers aren't correct and we are leaving billions on the table, maybe we should pause. And why would it be too harsh to pause? When you look at why most goals aren't set till 2030, it's because the state of Oregon doesn't come off coal until 2008 or 2029 or 2028, guys. We can't move forward with any sizable clean energy till our grid comes off coal. We have time to slow this down. We have time to get to a set of numbers to agree on how we can put billions of development in Oregon. We do. And also the federal government under Biden is probably possibly going to mandate 100% clean by 2035, thus allowing billions and billions of dollars to come into investment. And if we have policy that says we're not going to make sure some of that investment comes in Oregon, are we going to allow that federal government money to go to other states? So I do appreciate the conversation. I do appreciate the intent of the bill. At this time, I can't support it. I am optimistic, and I look to a future where we can get together, we can have solid numbers, we can have solid conversations. How can we invest in Oregon? How can Oregon lead in bold energy policy while making sure we have jobs, communities, and great economy following 100% clean? So I hope this committee would take some of that to heart, look at the numbers, and maybe just pause, because it's actually not going to affect 100% clean until we come off coal. Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Representative Owens, for your comments. We're going to move to public testimony now, and I would like to remind everyone to keep your camera off and your microphone off until you're called on. We're going to start with the first handful, or maybe more than a handful of people, with a time limit of 3 minutes each. Would the committee assistant please sound the timer so that people know what to listen for? Okay, great. Thank you. We're going to start with 3 minutes, and then to try to provide an opportunity for everyone who's taken the time to sign up, and I would like to get to everybody. At some point, we're going to switch to 2 minutes each. I will tell you several names in advance so you can start to prepare. Adam Lohman, followed by Bob Jenks, Scott Bolton, Alessandra De La Torre. Those are the first four. Adam Lohman, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Pham and Reschke, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Adam Lohman. I'm the Oregon Legislative Environmental Caucus Fellow. On behalf of Representative Pam Marsh, I have been working with a group of stakeholders to develop the proposal for the Community-Based Renewable Energy Project Grant Program. I'll briefly describe the program and then run through some of the key changes in the Dash 46 amendment. A community-based renewable energy project is one or more renewable energy systems that promotes resiliency, increases renewable energy generation or storage capacity, and provides a direct benefit to a particular community. Under this program, public bodies and federally recognized Oregon Indian tribes may apply for grants to offset the cost of planning and developing these projects in Oregon to make them economically feasible. The program is specifically targeted towards projects that will benefit rural, coastal, lower income, and traditionally disadvantaged communities. The Oregon Department of Energy will administer the program. The Dash 46 amendment makes five changes to the program that I'd like to note. First, it makes technical changes and adds definitions and guidance to give the Department of Energy further direction in administering the program. Second, it gives more flexibility to grantees in the event that their projects are delayed. Third, it adjusts grants caps to $100,000 per grant for planning projects and $1 million per grant for developing projects. Fourth, it specifies that at minimum, 50% of grant funds must be reserved for community energy resilience projects, and 50% must be reserved for projects that primarily serve qualifying communities as defined in Section 29. Fifth and finally, the amendment adds additional reporting requirements to allow the department and the legislature to evaluate the ongoing success of the program. I would like to thank Representative Marsh for this opportunity and the staff at the Department of Energy and all the stakeholders that worked so hard on this proposal. Thank you for your time. I'm happy to answer your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Lohman. Next is Bob Jenks.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Pham and Reschke. For the record, my name is Bob Jenks. I'm Executive Director of the Oregon Citizens Utility Board. CUB supports House Bill 2021 with the Dash 46 amendments. This bill is a big deal. In it, we are committing to move to a system where we serve the loads of Oregon electric system without releasing greenhouse gas emissions. This isn't done through offsets, but this is done by delivering clean energy that offsets our emissions fully and completely. This will not be easy, particularly because the loads served by our utilities will be much different in the future. Climate models suggest that we must electrify transportation, we must electrify heating and cooling of buildings and other end uses. The load of the electric utility in after 2030 will be much different than the load today. It will require a broad diversity of renewable resources. We need resources that can provide heat at 6 a.m. in January, cooling at 8 p.m. In August, and fuel our Thanksgiving travel. We need resources when it is cloudy in Oregon, and we need resources when there's no wind blowing in Oregon. But it's not going to just take generation, renewable generation, to meet this system. We need to invest in the electric grid itself, the smart grid people have talked about, and that's where the biggest resiliency benefits will come from. We need to invest in storage assets, not just at the generation site, but throughout our distribution system. We need to increase investment in EV charging and energy efficiency. We need to upgrade to grid-connected heating and cooling systems in hundreds of thousands of buildings across the state. I know there have been questions about how much of the generation can be built in Oregon while still ensuring that there is the diversity and flexibility that's needed so we can meet load at all these times and under these conditions. But these other investments that we're going to make, investments in the grid, in EV charging, energy efficiency, in storage, in grid-connected heating and cooling, these are all local investments that will be happening in every community throughout the state of Oregon. This bill was carefully negotiated by a large group of stakeholders. CUB's proud to be part of that effort. Not everything, everyone got everything that they wanted, but the result in our minds is a really big step forward. And again, I just want to stress, we think this bill is a really, really big deal and is a bold commitment to do something through a zero emission energy system that a few years ago, I would have told you, oh, we couldn't get there without natural gas as a backup. And now we're committing to doing this in a way that doesn't include that. This really is a big deal. That's my message to you today. And I want to thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions people have.
Thank you, Mr. Jenks. Next, we will hear from Scott Bolton.
Thank you very much. Chair Nathanson's, Vice Chairs Pham and Reschke, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Scott Bolton, representing Pacific Corp. Thank you for the opportunity to appear before your committee today in support of House Bill 2021A and to speak to the Dash 46 amendment. As you may know, Pacific Corp serves about 620,000 customers as Pacific Power across Oregon and is the state's largest rural electricity provider. Our communities represent the geographic, cultural, and economic diversity of our state. And from our very beginning as an electricity provider founded in 1910 and originally in service to communities of Astoria and Pendleton, Oregon, and Walla Walla and Yakima, Washington, we've reflected the intersection of local service to our communities and region-wide investment, connecting those communities and many others to a very basic necessity. And I use my limited time here to point this out because today we continue that model, serving hundreds of local communities while leveraging the vast resources and regional diversity of the West. At Pacific Corp, one of the benefits of being a regional multi-state electricity provider is that we can share costs at scale and manage a diverse system that can provide the best solutions to all of our customers, regardless of where they live. Echoing Mr. Jenks's excellent testimony, I'll just say that House Bill 2021 represents a clean energy standard and a decarbonization strategy that uses all of the tools in the decarbonization toolbox. I think during the course of the development of this legislation and debates in prior committee, So much of the emphasis has been on simply renewable resources, which are a critical component of the clean energy transformation, but will be only one component. We are talking about the increased use of energy efficiency, demand response, and other energy management tools, the expansion of markets to better manage and integrate and leverage that regional diversity. All of these things, if done right, can be done in a way that can lower carbon emissions, help Oregon meet its goals, and above all else, protect the economic interests of our customers, providing them affordable, clean, and increasingly reliable electricity. As to the Dash 46 amendments, we do appreciate the work that and have been a part of the work that have gone into these amendments. They generally reflect technical fixes and implementation improvements identified since this bill was passed out of the House Energy and Environment Committee. We support the clarifications made in the grant program language. We think those changes will help the fair distribution of these grants. We remain concerned about the expansion of the requirement that obligates only two utilities in the state to bear the small-scale renewable mandate going to 10%. We do think that additional clarifying language to our regulators would be helpful in their ability to implement. Thank you for the time. Sorry I went over.
Thank you, Mr. Bolton. It was just a few seconds, or otherwise I would have jumped in.
Thank you.
But thank you very much. Representative Brock Smith, I believe, is back in the room. Are you here, Representative Brock Smith?
I am, Madam Chair. Thank you so much.
We're now in public testimony, and as you heard, Mr. Bolton, the members of the public have been very courteous and attentive to being in their 3-minute time limits now.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For your record, David Brock Smith, State Representative, House District 1, Madam Chair Nathanson, colleagues, I'll be brief. I have a number of amendments on file. In respect to my dear colleague, Rep. Marsh's comments earlier, and this being a cooperative process, colleagues have been involved in the carbon energy discussion since taking the office in the legislature in 2017, and arguably have attended more meetings and have been more involved in this discussion than other legislators in the state. I, as the former co-vice chair of the Joint Committee on Carbon Reduction, that was a cooperative and open and transparent process. Unfortunately, I have been out of the room on these discussions with this piece of legislation, and it has not been an open and transparent process. To Mr. Bolton's comments, what he's not telling you is Pacific Corps has a RFP out for energy projects in Wyoming to the tune of $4 billion. Yes, that's colleagues with a B, $4 billion. For renewable energy projects in Wyoming so that they can import the energy rather than investments in actually creating. That's why you don't hear green energy jobs, colleagues, because there ain't any. Actually creating jobs in Wyoming and not in Oregon and putting metal in the ground, which is rather unfortunate. And there was an opportunity to have a collaborative, bipartisan, bicameral bill. And this ain't it. The Dash 46 ain't it. And frankly, it's just a travesty, to be honest with you, that rates are going to continue to go up. There's been multiple bills that have allowed the rates to go up through the PUC. And yet we aren't going to look at any construction in the ground here. And the $50 million for those projects is a joke when you're talking about $4 billion. And it's just another travesty that you had legislators that were willing to push back against the IOUs to make something happen so we could actually have jobs in this state associated with transmission and renewable infrastructure, and yet everybody folded. So, Madam Chair, I'll leave it at that. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you for coming back into the meeting and joining us, Representative Brock Smith. The next speaker is Alessandra De La Torre, followed by Kevin Lynch. And after that will be Jen Hammacher.
Okay. Hello, can y'all see me?
Yes, please okay. Begin.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Pham, Vice Chair Rashke, Representative Levy, Representative Marsh, Representative Smith, and Representative Valderraman. Thank you for the opportunity to submit testimony in support of HB 2021-A and the Dash 46 amendments, or the 100% Clean Energy for All bill. My name is Alessandra de la Torre. I'm the energy justice organizer at Rural Climate, and we are a grassroots climate justice group based in Southern Oregon and the South Coast. Rural Climate strongly supports HB 2021-A generally and the Dash 46 specifically. We believe this new language helps to ensure that Oregon communities will reap the economic resiliency and other co-benefits from the transition to clean energy in Oregon. Every day in Southern Oregon, we see new solar panels come up, and on the South Coast, conversations about the potential for offshore wind are rolling. With declining costs, technology advancements, the impacts that fossil fuels have on our climate and communities, and the new commitment from the federal government, the transition to 100% clean energy seems inevitable. What is not inevitable is how this transition to clean energy is done and who will benefit. With HB 2021-A-46, the Oregon legislator has opportunity to ensure that this transition is done in the right way and that clean energy is a tool to reinvigorate local economies across the state and build resiliency into our energy system. We believe that the new language proposed in the forthcoming amendment by the Yakima Nation and other partners ensuring meaningful consultation with federally recognized tribes on clean energy and energy storage proposals that could impact cultural resources is vital. This is a step in the right direction to ensure that clean energy and energy storage projects don't come at the cost of tribal communities. We're also very pleased with the commitment to community-based and small-scale renewable energy projects that directly benefit Oregon communities in HB 2021-A that is strengthened in Dash A46. The Dash A46 adds a planning requirement to acknowledging the avoided costs and harms of fossil fuel generation. So this can be displaced and mitigated by more intentional investments in community-based renewable energy projects. These types of projects create local jobs, long-term investment, and energy resiliency in our communities. We're excited to see that the funding to support such projects will be focused outside of the city of Portland and hope that rural communities can take full advantage of these funds. Additionally, the new language that ensures the PUC considers energy resiliency for Oregon's energy system is another important step for our communities who are most impacted by energy shutoffs. Renewable energy like wind and solar is affordable and can help lift communities across Oregon out of the economic downturn that has resulted from the pandemic and the destructive fires that we saw here in the summer in Oregon. I'm wrapping up. The 100% Clean Energy for All bill is a critical opportunity for our Oregon to create jobs, boost local economies, and ensure a just transition when we need it the most. So I urge you to move the Dash 46 amendment and HB 2021-A with a due pass recommendation. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for being with us. Next is Kevin Lynch. If Mr. Lynch is unable to be with us right now, we will move on to Jen Hammacher, followed by Tim Miller.
Okay, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Please begin.
Hello?
Please begin. Jen Hammacher, we can
okay.
hear you.
Okay, okay.
Can hear you. Please right. start.
Okay. Good afternoon, Committee Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Pham, and Rescue. My name is Jen Hammacher. I oppose 2021. First, some testimony that today that supports this bill mentions job and revenue benefits in Oregon by erecting the infrastructure. However, the current restrictions and regulations in Oregon may make it more difficult to build and produce green energy within Oregon borders. Therefore, they might want to go out of state and erect. I just heard David Brock Smith talking about Wyoming. This is exactly what I'm writing about in this bill, that it doesn't guarantee, it doesn't have any requirements of staying within state to produce this electricity. And so basically Oregonians would be paying for other states' jobs, you know, the infrastructure, which would create jobs and revenue. And we'd be paying for that. And that's no bueno. Second, the DEQ director, Richard Whitman, just for reference, says that Oregon emits 0.14% of the world's emissions, whereas the cement industry emits 8% and the steel industry contributes 5% to the world emissions. Now, that's just a reference. Renewable energy certificates, which is cap and trade, is a system for controlling emissions. A limit is set on the amount of emissions a business can produce, but additional emission capacity can be bought, sold, and traded from other businesses that have not used their full allowance. Cap and trade creates an artificial market to buy, sell, and trade allowances as a commodity. This is bad. Who knows how much this will cost? How much is an allowance worth if the company needs it to continue to operate? I oppose any proposal that saddles ratepayers with higher electricity costs. I am concerned that HB 2021 lacks adequate protections for ratepayers and urge the committee to ensure that the costs of HB 2021 are not increased past what we're currently paying. Grants and subsidies just ties us to the government even more. I am against this. I am also concerned about the impacts of HB 2021 to grid reliability, as reliability is important, especially during the cold winter months. 2021 ice storms illustrate the importance of ensuring a resilient and reliable electrical grid, as hundreds of thousands of Oregonians were left without power for several days or more, requiring electricity providers to derive electricity from less reliable sources at a time when demand is increasing is a recipe for brownouts and rolling blackouts. I am concerned that customers of investor-owned utilities could experience issues with reliability without an adequate resource mix or off-ramps from this ambiguous policy. I'm also concerned that HB 2021 puts in place aggressive goals that are not achievable. Oregon already has some of the most affordable and clean electricity in the country. The state also has passed several policies to support the transition to clean and renewable power. These policies should be given an opportunity to work before the Oregon legislature adopts such a significant new program. I urge the committee not to establish goals that are impossible to meet.
Thank you, Ms. Hammaker, for your testimony. Next, we will hear from Tim Miller, and I will call on Kevin Lynch another time or two. Already called Kevin Lynch. Tim Miller will be followed by Nikita Daryanani.
Good afternoon, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Pham and Reschke, and members of the committee. My name is Tim Miller, and I'm Director of Oregon Business for Climate. Thank you for the chance to talk with you today in support of HB 2021A and the Dash 46 amendments. Oregon Business for Climate is a league of nearly 100 businesses across the state with nearly 30,000 employees. We believe climate leadership is critical to the health of Oregon's industries and communities in the growing clean economy. Our mission is to advance urgent, ambitious, equitable climate policies that spur innovation and economic opportunity. So today, we are proud to bring you a strong letter of support for HB 2021A from many leading Oregon employers and institutions. They represent sectors ranging from manufacturing to agriculture and food, renewable energy and fuels, clean technology, healthcare, the financial sector, and others. I'd like to mention just three examples to give you a little more specific sense of the supporters of this legislation. On the larger side, we have EC Electric, a leading electrical contractor providing renewable energy services, industrial construction, and advanced technologies. EC employs over 1,300 people, including 900 skilled IBEW electricians with five offices across the state. On the innovation side, there's Indo Windows, a growing Oregon manufacturer employing 48 people, making an energy efficient window insert technology. And this 100% clean energy bill will help them hit their strategic goal of being a 100% carbon free manufacturing operation. From an institutional perspective, there's Lewis and Clark College. This 100% clean energy policy aligns with their history of sustainability, helping them compete for students and leadership in a rapidly advancing economy. The overarching message is this: for Oregon to capture the economic benefits of leadership, we must act on clean energy now. This strong emissions-based approach, with its smart sideboards and off-ramps and its support for new local projects, is the right approach. With thanks to all the key stakeholders who came together to craft this solution, we believe HB 2021A will help position Oregon businesses for success in the growing clean economy. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Miller, for being with us. Next is Nikita Daryanani, and after that, I will call on Kevin Lynch one more time, and then we will go to Bill Bradbury.
Good afternoon, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Pham, and Vice Chair Werner Reschke. My name is Nikita Daryanani. I use she, her pronouns, and I am the Climate and Energy Policy Manager at the Coalition of Communities of Color, an alliance of culturally specific community-based organizations. I'm here today to speak in support of House Bill 2021-A generally and the -A46 amendment specifically. These technical fixes will achieve the base bill goal of a 100% clean energy for all Oregonians with added focus on community-based renewable energy and resiliency. Through HB 2021-A, we have the opportunity to ensure that communities who have historically faced and continue to face the worst impacts of climate, economic, and public health crises can share in the benefits of a clean energy future. This means that communities made up of Black, Indigenous, and people of color, such as those that CCC's member organizations work with, and coastal, rural, and low-income communities have access to jobs, decreased pollution, ownership over resources, and energy projects and are not further harmed by fossil fuel power plants. This bill lays out a clear, holistic vision for an environmentally and economically just energy system. The labor standards included in HB 2021-A create hiring targets for women, BIPOC, and marginalized groups to receive well-paying local jobs in the clean energy industry. The bill also creates opportunities and provides funding for community-based clean energy projects, which when paired with battery storage or microgrids can build community resilience during disasters and also community wealth in communities throughout Oregon. The -A46 amendment helps support these investments with more intentional focus on avoided health, economic, and environmental costs of community-based renewable projects acknowledged through the bill's planning process. HB 2021 is also clear about maximizing benefits while minimizing burdens to environmental justice communities, which is incredibly important to moving towards a just transition. Prohibiting the siting of new natural gas plants is also a critical step towards achieving this. We recognize the harm that energy projects have done to tribal communities historically and support a forthcoming amendment that would ensure better consultation and protection of cultural and historical resources in clean energy development. The pandemic, coupled with recent wildfires and ice storms throughout the state of Oregon, have highlighted the need for our energy system to be affordable, reliable, clean, and equitable. HB 2021-A addresses these needs and ensures that the inevitable shift to 100% clean electricity is done in a way that maximizes its host of benefits to all Oregonians. So there are so many reasons to be excited about this bill. We're proud to be part of the coalition of organizations working to set this critical standard for the state of Oregon and strongly urge your yes vote on HB 2021-A and the -A46 amendments. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for being with us. Kevin Lynch, are you here? I'm calling your name again. And for those people who are on phone only, you use *6 to unmute if you're not familiar with that. Mr. Lynch, are you with us? I'm not hearing Kevin Lynch yet. We'll try one more time later. Next is Bill Bradbury, followed by Katie Tyson, and then Les Perkins. Bill Bradbury.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a real pleasure to be here today. Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Bradbury, and I live in Bandon, Oregon, on the Southern Oregon coast. I currently chair OCEAN, which is the Oregon Clean Energy Alliance Network, which is located in Coosa and Curry County. And I am a very strong supporter of House Bill 2021 with the -46 amendments. House Bill 2021 does a lot for all kinds of renewable energy development, and I want to focus specifically on offshore wind. I've lived on the South Coast for over 50 years, and it's almost always windy here on the South Coast. But what I didn't know is that it's even windier a few miles west of here out in the ocean. The wind resource off the Oregon coast is called the Saudi Arabia of wind. So I think it's critical that we tap that. Passing House Bill 2021 is an important first step that gets us started on this remarkable renewable energy opportunity. Offshore wind provides an immense amount of clean, renewable energy to our grid while also providing family wage jobs to Oregonians. It enables 2021 enables offshore wind to be part of the renewable mix, and it benefits the South Coast with jobs and local energy. I strongly support House Bill 2021-46 amendments, and I hope you will too as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Bradbury, for being with us today. It's good to see you again.
You too.
next is Katie Tyson.
Great. Thanks, Chair Nathanson. Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Reschke and Pham, members of the committee, Katie Tyson with the Oregon AFL-CIO, the statewide federation of labor unions representing over 300,000 workers in every corner of the state and in just about every industry. So first, you know, Oregon workers recognize that climate change is having devastating impacts on our communities and our economy. So it's imperative that workers are at the table as our state moves towards our climate and energy goals, and that working Oregonians aren't left behind in any transition. I will be brief, but I did just want to elevate that strong labor standards are a critical and necessary component of any version of this bill that moves forward. House Bill 2021A, as is, represents places of common ground between labor and industry on high road labor standards, including apprenticeship standards, goals for hiring and recruiting veterans, women, and people of color, wage standards, and health and retirement benefits to the employees providing labor on the projects. We really appreciate the work of numerous legislators and stakeholders to ensure this inclusion of responsible contractor language that advances these key workforce standards. And I believe RAMFE's Genetino Viatoro from the Blue Green Alliance is testifying later. If you have technical questions on this part of the bill and how the Dash 46 amendment does not change those labor standards. So we know that Oregon's communities and economies can only thrive when there are policies in place to ensure comprehensive training, robust imprint from Oregonians most impacted, and jobs that are safe and provide good benefits. The labor standards in House Bill 2021A will set Oregon on a path to ensure clean energy jobs are good quality jobs, while also putting us on parity with other states who have passed or in the process of passing their own 100% standards. And finally, you know, we really encourage the legislature to continue to have a keen eye towards including robust and comprehensive labor standards in every policy decision. Thank you so much.
Thank you for being with us. And now I'm going to try one more time. Kevin Lynch, are you with us?
Chair Nathanson, can you hear me now?
I can hear you really well. Please go ahead.
Fifth time is the charm. Thank you so much to you and your colleagues on the committee for your patience. A little bit of a telecommunication problem this afternoon. Thanks to you and to for taking my testimony, to you and the committee members and the vice chairs. I'm Kevin Lynch. I work for Avangrid Renewables based in Portland. We have about a gigawatt of wind and solar projects operating in Oregon. We are building another about 500 megawatts right now. That's a couple of $1 billion of capital investment in the state. I've given a written statement to the committee, but just a couple of comments that I want to provide in summary. We are building these projects in Oregon now. Some of them are to serve Oregon customers, particularly Portland General Electric. One other, at least at this time, is to serve a customer from out of state. utility in Washington. We are also trying very hard to win over the competition to build a couple of Oregon projects in the PacifiCorp renewable RFP that was just mentioned. That's something that's spread across six states for all of their customers. And I know that they are looking to procure renewable energy in all of the states where they do business. So there are really some great opportunities out there. We love doing business in Oregon. As I said, we've probably invested more than $2 billion in the state in renewable energy in the last couple of years. We think there are more opportunities to come. We do think it's very important, though, to recognize that there are that we work at, or that the electricity system is a multi-state market, both physically and economically. And sometimes it's good to get a lot of efficiency out of a lot of different sources. So the combination of things that Mr. Jenks referred to, energy efficiency, building up the transmission grid, doing some local community projects, as well as having a vibrant interstate electric system with a lot of good sources of generation to meet the needs to get to 100% is where we should be going, and that bill seems to do it. That's my statement. Thanks so much for your patience, and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Lynch. I'm glad that you persisted and you were able to rejoin. As you said, the fifth time is a charm. We have another speaker. I want to announce the next few. It's going to be Les Perkins, followed by Sonny Radcliffe and Spencer Gray. And while Mr. Bradbury is still with us, I want to make sure that I acknowledge that we appreciate the participation of such a distinguished public servant and elected official who's still working on behalf of Oregonians. So glad you can be with us. Les Perkins, please.
Yes, Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Thank you. For the record, I'm Les Perkins, the general manager of the Farmers Irrigation District, which owns and operates two small low-impact hydro-certified facilities. Our hydropower units not only generate clean, renewable energy for the community, but also help to enhance the reliability of delivering water to farmers in the Hood River Valley, while reducing the long-term costs of investments in resilience measures. We've owned and operated these community-based renewable projects for over 30 years. I'm also a Hood River County Commissioner and Chair of the Community Renewable Energy Association, or CREA, which I will speak on behalf of today. Unfortunately, CREA is here to oppose the negotiated amendment before you because we believe it is lacking two crucial provisions that would ensure a portion of these renewable projects are one, small, under 20 megawatts, and two, located right here in Oregon. First, we must fix the math problem being used to calculate Oregon's current small-scale renewable mandate. As adopted in the 2016 session, the small-scale community mandate requires investor-owned utilities to purchase at least 8% of their renewable energy from small, under 20-megawatt projects. However, a few key words added in the final hours have had a chilling effect on new small-scale projects actually being built in Oregon and envisioned by the policy. The change adjusted the compliance standard to be based on capacity rather than generation. This dramatic policy shift has needlessly and significantly jeopardized the amount of renewables needed to attain the 8% mandate. We need a simple change from capacity to generation. Let's make sure the mandate has meaning by making sure the formula to assess compliance is real and requires IOUs to make the small-scale renewable investment intended by policymakers. Community-scale distributed renewable projects are essential to achieve our resilience goals. Second, there must be a requirement that a portion of these projects be built in Oregon. We support the Dash 48 amendment, but believe it should be higher than 25% in Oregon. In fact, it should be at least 50%. We must prioritize renewable energy projects that produce direct energy resiliency and economic benefits for Oregon. We want to thank Rep. Helm, Rep. Brock-Smith, and Rep. Owens for their hard work over the past few weeks championing these specific provisions and ask that this committee not advance this bill until the small-scale community renewable mandate methodology is fixed and the requirement that at least 50% of these renewable projects be located in Oregon. Thank you for your time today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for being with us. I'm going to announce the next few speakers. We still have a long list of people signed up to testify. I don't know that we're going to be able to make it through the list. We are now changing to 2 minutes each. And if any of you have signed up, I know there are a couple from the same organization. if it could be just one of you instead of two, that would be really helpful. So we're switching to 2 minutes each now. Sunny Radcliffe, followed by Spencer Gray, then Max Green.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Pham, Vice Chair Reschke, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of House Bill 2021A and the Dash 46 amendments. For the record, my name is Sunny Radcliffe. I'm the Director of Government Affairs at Portland General Electric. PGE shares our customers and our community's vision of a clean and reliable energy future. Last year, we set ambitious climate goals to reflect urgency and climate change and to meet customers' expectations. Those are very much in alignment with the goals that are contained within House Bill 2021. We know that we need well-designed policy, regulatory, and technology advancements to help us get there on these goals and to ensure that electricity service remains reliable and affordable for all of our customers. We do believe that a carefully designed 100% clean electricity standard like 2021A with Dash 46 amendments will be an effective tool for achieving these outcomes and driving greenhouse gas emissions out of Oregon's electric sector. We appreciate that House Bill 2021 takes an approach of focusing on clean resources and doesn't pick winners and losers in non-emitting technologies. This is critical if we're going to decarbonize on the timeline that climate science requires. And we know that very clearly new renewable resources in Oregon will play a critical role in this transition, along with energy efficiency, demand response, and other carbon-reducing initiatives. An example of this, and an excellent one, frankly, is Wheat Ridge, which is in Morrow County. That's our joint project with NextEra Energy Resources. We've got a 300-megawatt wind farm now complete, began delivering power to PGE customers this past December. The 50-megawatt solar and 30-megawatt battery facilities are going to be completed by the end of 2021. Almost 300 jobs were created at Wheat Ridge during construction of the wind farm. Another 175 workers are being employed on the solar and storage sites. 10 will work full-time going forward. I'll just cut to the chase here. In general, we support the changes made by the Dash 46 amendments. I do want to flag that PGE has some concerns with regard to the small-scale renewables mandate expanded in the Dash 46. We do think it would be helpful for the legislature to provide clarification on questions that have remained unsettled since 2016 when the language was added at the last minute to Senate Bill 1547, the Clean Electricity and Coal Transition Act. With that, I'll end my remarks in support of House Bill 2021A. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you. And thank you for winding up in a very succinct way. Appreciate it. If other speakers could end there, when you hear the bell, if you can end in six words or so, not a paragraph or two, that's what will need to happen to get through the whole list. Next is Spencer Gray, followed by Max Green, then Carrie Mead.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, for holding this hearing on this important bill. For the record, my name is Spencer Gray. I'm the Executive Director of the Northwest and Intermountain Power Producers Coalition. We are a membership organization of independent power producers and marketers in the Northwest who can deliver on the clean energy targets set in this bill. I want to recognize the hard work by a diverse stakeholder group who helped pull this bill together with the support of legislators, including some on this committee. NIPSE supports the objective of passing a clean energy standard, which is the heart of this bill, and I encourage the committee to help the bill take its next step. The bill generally treats competitors in the power sector fairly and sets aggressive but achievable targets. NIPSE is neutral on the Dash 46 amendment under consideration today. The one section of the bill that, from NIPSE's perspective, still really needs some attention is Section 26 on labor standards. Renewable energy companies that I represent support ensuring that workers constructing their projects earn a living wage, have apprenticeship opportunities, and many of these companies support using project labor agreements. But prevailing wage standards for public works that use public funds don't map cleanly onto this part of the private sector. So NIPSE believes the section needs some adjustments to reflect this fact, in particular to address some types of subcontracts and to clarify the enforcement of the section. When Washington passed a similar clean energy law and labor provision 2 years ago, it included a tax exemption for renewable projects to help offset the new wage standard, but that approach hasn't been possible in Oregon. So I would underscore that getting this section right is important to ensure that more projects under this law are actually built here in Oregon. Thank you for your time.
And thank you for your testimony. Max Green.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Max Green, and I'm the Regulatory and Policy Director for Renewable Northwest. Renewable Northwest works to decarbonize the region's electricity system by accelerating the transition to renewable energy. Our members include environmental nonprofits, consumer advocates, renewable energy developers, and supporting businesses. I'm here today to support HB 2021A. This bill is the product of a broad set of stakeholders working together to identify a path to 100% clean electricity system for Oregon. The legislative process has improved this bill, and following up on Mr. Gray's remarks, ongoing discussions to finalize changes to the bill's labor standards lead me to believe that agreement around those standards can be embedded in the final bill. One question, though, that I want to address that's come up frequently is whether this bill will lead to more renewable energy development opportunities. I am confident that it will, and I'll explain why. Oregon's investor-owned utilities are already bringing on renewable energy projects, including projects in Oregon, as the committee has heard from others before you today, to meet their needs on a least cost, least risk basis, and to serve voluntary programs for customers who want to be served with additional clean energy beyond a provider's normal resource mix. Working with our partners at Climate Solutions and Northwest Energy Coalition, Renewable Northwest took a closer look at how those renewable energy additions relate to greenhouse gas emission reductions. By correlating the near-term greenhouse gas emission reductions with expected in utilities resource plans with the renewable additions that are associated with those reductions, we found that meeting this bill's 2030 emission reduction targets could lead to approximately 2,700 megawatts of incremental renewables above what utilities are already planning. We tested that figure by looking at the utility's current resource mix, backing coal and gas resources out of the utility's portfolios, and replacing the lost energy and capacity with new renewables. This exercise resulted in a similar amount of additional wind and solar. Thank you, and I'd like to reiterate our support for the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Green. And for anyone who has already testified and felt like you were, you had another sentence or two you needed to say, for you, Mr. Green, anyone else before you or who might follow, we can still happily accept your written comments for 24 hours, up to 24 hours after this meeting started today. So if you want to send us something in writing this afternoon, tonight, tomorrow morning, please do so. Next is Carrie Mead, followed by Meredith Connolly and Oriana Manera.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Carrie Mead. I'm the executive director of the Northwest Energy Efficiency Council, and I am here to voice our support for HB 2021. NEAC is a nonprofit business association representing over 100 businesses in Oregon and Washington, who deliver smart buildings, demand flexibility, and energy efficiency products and services. We applaud the work of the legislature to design a thoughtful approach to decarbonizing electricity in Oregon. I've previously testified, both submitting written testimony at an earlier hearing and oral testimony, and outlining our support for this bill and sharing our view that a policy such as this must consider the role of demand-side resources and management equally alongside supply-side generation resources. We are supportive of Section 4 of the bill, the section that describes the Clean Energy Plan provisions, especially the language that requires utilities to identify actions around energy efficiency, demand response, and other distributed technologies that support them in achieving their clean energy targets. In remaining technology neutral and allowing demand-side investments, this bill provides utilities with more options to meet the requirements set forth in the legislation in the most efficient and affordable manner. Demand side management is also local, as it's someone said earlier, local economic development. This is an opportunity to create Oregon-based jobs for commercial and residential contractors, as well as new roles in facility operations and maintenance. We urge you to support this important bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions you have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Meredith Connolly?
Yes, hi. Rep. Nathanson, I'm trying to come off video. There we go. Good afternoon, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Pham and Rechke, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Meredith Connolly, and I'm the Oregon Director at Climate Solutions. We're a regional nonprofit working to accelerate the clean energy solutions to the climate crisis. I am testifying in strong support for HB 2021A and the Dash 46 Amendment. This amendment represents thoughtful negotiation with many stakeholders representing diverse interests to put the finishing touches on an ambitious and pragmatic policy to transition Oregon to 100% clean electricity over the next two decades. This policy fits well into existing planning and review processes by the PUC, and it leverages DEQ's existing greenhouse gas accounting system. The Dash 46 amendment makes clear that 100% emissions-free electricity is required by 2040 and for every year after for the electricity that serves Oregon customers. As you've heard today and previously from renewable developers like Avangrid and EDP Renewables, this clear mandated clean energy standard sends a strong market signal that emissions-free resources are demanded in Oregon and creates greater investor and project certainty. This translates into more demand for renewable energy, energy efficiency, demand response in other projects in Oregon and across the region, and the need to start planning and building those needed projects sooner rather than later. As Max Green from Renewable Northwest said, we've seen this could lead to up to 2,765 megawatts of new wind and solar projects by 2030 needed by PGE and PacifiCorp. An E2 Clean Jobs report for Oregon last year made clear that Oregonians working in the clean energy sector are represented across the state, but COVID-19 has really hammered this sector just like so many others. This 100% clean policy, which is augmented by the Dash 46 amendment, will be the next smart clean energy policy that fuels job growth across the state and reinvests in Oregon's clean energy economy after COVID. This technology-neutral clean energy standard leads to good quality jobs across many sectors, which includes, but goes beyond, renewable energy. For example, we've seen that energy efficiency is a job creator workhorse here, and it creates tens of thousands of critical employment opportunities that are in every county in Oregon. These are important and valuable jobs and services that matter to thriving businesses and communities, and these jobs are inherently local. By passing this bill with the Dash 46 amendment, legislators can help stimulate an economic recovery in our state, catch Oregon up to the rest of the West Coast to go 100% clean. Thank you.
Thank you for the testimony and for wrapping up like that. Nicely done. Oriana Manera, followed by Damon Mott-Story.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Pham, Vice Chair Rishke, and members of the House Revenue Committee. For the record, my name is Oriana Manera. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm the Energy, Climate, and Transportation Manager at Verde. I'm grateful and honored today to testify in support of House Bill 2021-A and the Dash A46 amendments. This bill has been a long road and a challenging session, and I want to acknowledge and express gratitude for all the stakeholders and legislators who have stayed engaged throughout, even if they do not see their full vision in the language as it is now. Policymaking is difficult work, sometimes emotionally so, beyond the grind and the weeds. Everyone has given something bitter in the process of moving HB 2021A. Some have felt the loss and toll, and I want to acknowledge that before focusing on the incredible gains that this bill can make and how much we agree on. These are not sacrifices in vain. We have before us a strong bill that does reflect broad consensus and many groundbreaking advances for Oregon and energy sector. This is also a first step in a much greater body of energy policy work that will enhance and hone the reforms we hope to put in place in House Bill 2021-A. The Dash A46 amendments are a move in that direction. While mostly technical in nature, they deepen commitments to community-based renewable energy, in part by embedding the avoided cost considerations of such projects against the harms of the fossil fuel infrastructure of the past. They create new opportunities to grow resiliency by giving the Public Utility Commission increased authority and direction around this crucial issue. They also address various stakeholder concerns, including the unique service territory and ratepayer base of Idaho Power. We also are in support of a forthcoming amendment that will ensure that tribal governments receive meaningful consultation around not only the implementation of House Bill 2021-A 21-A, but also the development of energy projects that will be needed to achieve the bill's goals. We can't maximize community benefit and minimize environmental justice burdens if we do not pay special attention to the sacrifice zones that have been created on tribal lands and harms to tribal resources throughout the history of energy expansion in the Northwest. But we have an opportunity to do better. Also of need will be special attention toward ensuring that Oregon communities benefit from project development and the implementation of this bill. We've heard from Representative Owens that this is of great concern, and we feel that this bill can address it meaningfully, but our work is not done. We feel that HB 2021-A is a strong bill, as are the -A 46 amendments, and we're continue to that work going forward.
Thank you very much. Damon Mott's story, and that will be followed by Jeff Bissonette and Jana Gastelum.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Pham, Vice Chair Reschke, and members of the House Revenue Committee, thank you so much for the opportunity to testify. For the record, my name is Damon Mott-Story, and I am the Healthy Climate Program Director at Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. Guided by the values and expertise of medicine and public health, Oregon PSR works to protect human life from the gravest threats to health and survival, and we represent over 2,800 health professionals and public health advocates statewide. Oregon PSR enthusiastically supports House Bill 2021-A with the -46 amendments. We enthusiastically support those as well. With these additions, we're confident that this 100% clean energy for all bill is ready to go and should be moved forward. In addition to ensuring that Oregon charts a course to a fully emissions-free electricity grid, this bill will create significant co-benefits to public health, and it is increasingly clear that the time to pass this framework for clean energy and a substantial investment in community-based energy projects is now. I do want to also additionally add that we are looking forward to testimony and input from the Yakima Nation, and would support anything that we can do to ensure that new energy projects do not harm federally recognized tribes and cultural resources. The bill before you today is a straightforward and well-constructed bill that is wisely focused on reducing the biggest greenhouse gas emissions from our electricity sector while setting a cost cap on investor-owned utilities to ensure that Oregon ratepayers are not unfairly footing the bill. Comprehensive labor standards and environmental justice protections and co-benefits for rural, coastal, low-income, and BIPOC communities mean that this bill will move our electricity sector in a direction that supports Oregon workers while minimizing harms to communities that have historically borne the brunt of our energy system, and while making sure that no one is left behind from the opportunities of the clean energy workforce. All of this together is good news for our state's social determinants of health and demonstrates that this policy is a new chapter for Oregon. So with that, thank you for the opportunity to testify on this important bill. Please adopt the -46 amendments and move it forward. Thank you very much.
And thank you for the testimony. We're ready for Jeff Bissonette, followed by Jana Gastelum, and then Jen Visser after that.
Madam Chair, can you hear me? This is Jeff.
Yes, we can hear you.
Great. I'm going to leave my camera off. I apologize for that, but my internet's been a little bit spotty, and I don't rather you hear me than see me. I will just take a moment to say that I've submitted testimony in advance that can be found on OLIS, and then I will kind of finish Max Green's testimony that he was talking about how he came up with 2,700 plus megawatts of new renewables by 2030 that we think this bill will drive. He was saying that we tested the figures according to the methodology he described by also looking at each utility's current resource mix and backing out current coal and gas and looking at what renewable additions might be necessary to replace the lost energy and capacity from ceasing operations or retiring fossil generation at a rate necessary to achieve HB 2021A's emission reduction targets. We also compared PGE's projected incremental additions necessary to achieve the same 2030 emissions reduction target. This additional analysis confirmed very similar levels of renewable resource additions as a result of this bill. And I want to stress that as a result of this bill, in addition to other things that are being done to meet other renewable energy energy requirements that this legislature has already passed. So, and I also want to say too, in terms of in-state, there is some very compelling legal analysis that gets after the the U.S. Commerce Clause. And, similar in-state requirements in California have run into legal difficulty, and that's been really the barrier for not including something similar here in this bill. But this is a big deal. There's a lot of renewables, there's a lot of efficiency, and it will create a lot of development here in the state. Thank you very much. Happy to answer questions if needed.
Thank you for the testimony. Janet Gastelum, followed by Jen Visser.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Spam and Reschke, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Janet Gastelum. I'm Deputy Director for Programs at Oregon Environmental Council. We're a statewide nonpartisan membership-based nonprofit and support HB 2021 and the Dash 46 Amendment. There's been a remarkable coalition process to create HB 2021 and the Dash 46 Amendment. And as a result, the bill is tailored to Oregon. It recognizes our unique attributes, but also maintains the benefits of a regional grid, as Bob outlined earlier. It's also fair between different energy providers and supports quality jobs and creates community benefit. From a practical standpoint, the Clean Energy Standard utilizes a technology-neutral emissions framework. It sets targets, and then different resources and technologies will be right-sized to reach them. This approach supports jobs in renewables, but also demand response, energy efficiency, and other technologies that make for a truly robust and resilient energy sector. Oregon will be served with reliable, affordable electricity that is also clean. And many other states have clean energy standards with similar structures, like New Mexico, Colorado, and New Jersey. What we like is that the bill also builds on existing processes, like robust planning done at the PUC. In addition to addressing the urgency of the climate crisis, the bill is needed now to influence that planning. While we might be used to flipping a switch to turn on the lights, planning processes need longer runways, and it's absolutely critical that we get started now. OEC also supports efforts to maximize community benefits. A 100% clean energy policy paired with the investment fund that recognizes other benefits such as local economic development and resiliency is a truly powerful combination. And we look forward to the continued conversations at the PUC that the Dash 46 Amendment sets up as well. It's also important to us that the jobs created are good jobs. The bill benefits Oregon by creating a skilled and trained workforce through apprenticeship opportunities, as well as workforce equity goals. Health benefits help workers while they're on the job, and retirement benefits help as they age. And we appreciate the conversations that were held in good faith and urge support for HB 2021 and the Dash 46. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Jen Visser, followed by Kathy Moyd, then Phil Rigdon.
Hi, Madam Chair and members of committee. Jen Visser, Director of Government Affairs for Idaho Power Company. I am just here on standby in case anyone had questions for Idaho Power. I don't intend to testify.
Thank you for being available.
My pleasure.
Next is Kathy Moyd.
Hello. It's Kathy Moyd. I'm speaking on behalf of the League of Women Voters of Oregon. We supported the Dash 5 and Dash 9 amendments for HB 2021, and we're pleased to see both of them in the Dash 23 amendment, which was adopted by the House committee. We were concerned about the lengthy negotiations in the Revenue Committee, but see that the Dash 46 amendment improves the bill, and therefore we strongly urge the passage of HB 2021 with the Dash 46 amendment. We recognize the incorporation of concerns about resource adequacy and cost to consumers, and especially appreciate the increased attention to resilience in the amendment. We believe that the community-based renewable energy projects can help with all of these, and that the $50 million appropriation will allow work on them to be started quickly. We have been following the cap and reduce program, now called Climate Protection Program, and have been concerned that neither the Department of Environmental Quality nor the Public Utility Commission currently has the authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions in the generation of imported electricity. We believe this legislation will give the DEQ and the PUC the authority they need to fully carry out and even exceed the specifications in Executive Order 20-04. We are glad to see that the section on fossil fuel plants from HB 2021A was not modified by the Dash 46 amendment and still limits new and expanded plants to generate only non-emitting electricity. We recognize that the way non-emitting electricity is defined may allow for carbon capture and storage. Thank you for the opportunity to support this important legislation, and an expanded version of this testimony has already been posted on OLIS.
Good. Thank you for the testimony. Phil Rigdon. And that will be followed by Amy Schlesser. Mr. Rigdon. Mr. Rigdon, if you're joining us by phone only, it's star six to unmute. I'll come back to Mr. Rigdon. Next is Amy Schlesser, followed by Ana Molina.
Good afternoon, Chair, Vice Chairs, and members of the committee. My name is Amy Schlesser, and I'm a staff attorney with the Green Energy Institute at Lewis and Clark Law School. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to express my strong support for HB 2021 and the Dash 46 amendment. Climate change is a global problem with severe local impacts, and it's already having a tragic impact on Oregon's communities. However, Oregon has fallen far behind our neighboring West Coast states in addressing the climate impacts from our electricity system. HB 2021 and the amendment will help put Oregon back on track in addressing climate change and will better align our grid with other West Coast jurisdictions. It will also create a grant program to support development of clean energy resources in Oregon that benefit Oregon's vulnerable communities and create jobs for state residents. As previous testimony has stated, the bill represents consensus of key and diverse stakeholders. The widespread support for HB 2021 shows how strongly Oregon needs this legislation, and perhaps more importantly, indicates that the bill's directives are both feasible and achievable. We can build an electricity system that is 100% clean and carbon-free. And we can do so in a way that's equitable and provides direct and meaningful benefits to Oregon's communities. HB 2021 and the Dash 46 amendment will complement Oregon's existing energy and climate policies and establish mechanisms to help make our electric system more resilient and efficient, while also ensuring that electricity remains affordable and reliable for all Oregonians. I urge the committee to support HB 2021 and the Dash 46 amendments and help Oregon catch up with our West Coast neighbors and give our utilities and communities the direction, tools, and funds they need to create a clean, equitable, and resilient electricity system for the state. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for being with us. Ana Molina, followed by Ronfis Villatoro.
Hello, Chair Representative Nancy Nathanson and Vice Chairs Pham and Reschke and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to submit testimony in support of House Bill 2021-A and the Dash A 46 Amendment, 100% Clean Energy for All. My name is Ana Molina, and I am with Beyond Toxics, a statewide environmental justice organization, and I am their statewide environmental justice projects manager. We at Beyond Toxics work on advancing policies that ensure meaningful participation and cultivate grassroots leadership from Oregon's frontline and impacted communities. As an organization that works at the intersection of race and public health, we ask you to move HB 2021-A forward in order to achieve 100% clean energy for all Oregonians. We work with our community in West Eugene, who is already disproportionately affected by air pollution in their neighborhood. A good portion of it related to fossil fuel emissions. Communities of color are also disproportionately burdened by the fossil fuel economy, which creates harmful air pollution that can worsen lung disease, heart disease, and other health conditions in many communities. In order to protect the health of communities, we must have tangible emission reduction goals, maintaining strong mandated targets to reach 100% clean by 2040. And strong interim targets will help ensure we're on track to achieving the emissions reduction goals and improving the health of our communities in Oregon with HB 2021. As an organization that works on advancing policies that ensure meaningful participation from grassroots leadership in Oregon's frontline and impacted communities, we recognize that HB 2021A must also include required thresholds and hiring targets for women, Black, Indigenous people of color, and marginalized groups in the clean energy workforce and ensure that workers are paid living wages with benefits and apprenticeship opportunities. This will secure good, well-paying local energy jobs to build projects in Oregon communities and set them on the path to a just transition that our communities can meaningfully engage in. We are proud to be part of the coalition of organizations working to set this critical standard for the state and strongly urge your support for a strong HB 2021-A46 amendment. Thank you.
And thank you. Ron Villatoro, that will be followed by Jane Stackhouse.
Good afternoon, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Reschke, Vice Chair Pham, and members of committee. For the record, my name is Ranfis Giannettino Villatoro, and I'm the Oregon Policy Coordinator with Blue Green Alliance. We are a national organization founded by the United Steelworkers and Sierra Club on the national level. Blue Green Alliance is guided by the principle that we can no longer choose between good jobs and a clean and safe environment. That the actions we take to create quality jobs and protect working people and the environment must go hand in hand. That together that we will build a clean, thriving, and fair economy. Our Oregon membership includes the Oregon AFL, Oregon Environmental Council, Climate Solutions, Sierra Club, Chapter, IBW 48, United Steelworkers, just to name a few. As Katie testified earlier on behalf of the Oregon AFL, CIO noted that the bill in the Dash 46 amendment continues to represent a common ground approach to address our climate and energy challenges while continuing to place workers at the table for this transition. I will try to add quickly here that this is something really to celebrate. Not only is this advancing clean energy jobs, it's advancing clean energy careers. By setting an apprenticeship standard with workforce equity goals, it's allowing workers to have the skills not only to work on clean energy job projects in our state, but additionally outside of our state, and have the skills to be able to work on not only clean energy projects, but transportation projects, energy efficiency projects. So we continue to look forward to continue to strengthen and find common ground on this bill. I've always continued to enjoy the conversations, not just from this committee, but at House and Energy, and broadly around clean energy solutions. And we continue to want to, Blue Green Alliance will continue to want to work with both sides to advance common ground, to advance clean energy jobs. So I just want to thank everyone for the work thus far, and just want to voice your support for House Bill 2021, the Dash 46. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us. Next is Jane Stackhouse, and after that, I will try to reach Phil Rigdon again.
Hello, Chair Nathanson.
Yes.
Vice Chairs Pham and Reschke, and members of the House Committee on Revenue. My name is Jane Stackhouse. I'm a volunteer with the Metro Climate Action Team and with Act for Democracy's Climate, Energy, and Environment team. I was trained by Al Gore as a climate reality leader in 2016. I am in support of HB 2021A, the 100% clean energy bill, and with this new Dash 46 amendment, because it strengthens the community-based clean energy development. We see the effects of climate change every day. I'm concerned about the future of my 7 grandchildren and all future generations. Even after we stop dumping pollution into our shared atmosphere, We will need lifetimes to absorb the existing carbon and lower the total parts per million back to reasonable levels. I've heard with interest Rep. Owen's concerns and Rep. Smith's concerns about this amendment, and I would urge them to support this bill. We cannot let the perfect be the enemy of the good. I believe that we will see increased community development, and Rep. Owen will see the community benefits in his district. I also believe that this bill will make Oregon so competitive that we will easily attract new development of clean energy in our state. The market will take care of that, and we will have offshore wind in Coos Bay.
Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Next is, it is Phil Rigdon with us yet. Phil Rigdon. I'll try again in another couple of minutes. Gwen Baldwin, followed by Grace Brown.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Pham and Reschke, and members of the House Revenue Committee. For the record, my name is Gwen Baldwin, representing the City of Beaverton, here today in support of House Bill 2021A, especially the Community Green Tariff option in sections 20 through 25, as well as the -A46 amendment. In December 2019, the City of Beaverton adopted its Climate Action Plan, a set of climate action goals to address the growing impacts of climate change. Within that plan, Beaverton has a community target of 100% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions by 2025, which means meeting a net zero emissions goal for electricity by 2035. The Community Green Tariff option can help Beaverton reach its goals in several meaningful ways. First, simple, transparent, and timely renewable options for the community's entire customer base are essential for us to meet these goals. Second, mid-sized cities like Beaverton, with limited resources to dedicate, rely on larger system changes to advance decarbonization in the utility sector. The Community Green Tariff will allow Beaverton and other interested jurisdictions to begin working with our utility providers to design a municipal-wide green energy product that aligns with our climate action goals. In 2019, 29.6% of resident accounts in Beaverton were enrolled in existing clean energy programs. The Community Green Tariff option could expand that enrollment as high as 80%, according to recent polls, while adding the benefit of generation occurring within Oregon. House Bill 2021A will help Beaverton make real progress on our climate action goals, and the 100% goal for the state will ensure all consumers in Oregon will eventually participate in reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Thank you.
Thank you. Grace Brown. Grace Brown. For Grace Brown or Phil Rigdon, if you're speaking, if you're trying to join us by phone, remember to unmute is *6. Is Grace Brown with us? How about Phil Rigdon? Well, while I stall for just a minute here, committee members, do you have any questions for any of the persons testifying who might still be with us? We have another 3 minutes before we're probably going to get kicked off the line because we need to make this room, this virtual room, available for the next meeting. Any last minute questions? I'm not seeing any questions. And one last call for Grace Brown or Phil Rigdon. Star 6 to unmute and just speak up if you're there. And while we're waiting just another few seconds, I'd like to ask the Legislative Revenue Office staff, does that complete the list of everyone signed up to testify? On my records, I believe it does, except for those people who we didn't hear from.
Yes, that is correct, Madam Chair.
Thank you for confirming that. Okay. I'm sorry that those other two maybe were not able to speak. Perhaps they had other meetings or engagements. Thank you all for being with us today. I'm glad that we got to hear such a wide array of voices from around the state to speak to this bill and in particular to this amendment. Again, thanks to everyone and thanks to the committee. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2021. Mr. Alanak, any other business before we adjourn for the day?
No, Madam Chair, you've completed your agenda.
Okay. Thank you all. We're adjourned.